GOP Senate candidates tie themselves to Trump but take different routes to do it. Speaker Bosma defends the legislature. That, plus the lottery prevents big payouts and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 6th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, new ads in the Senate GOP primary race see the candidates trying to align themselves the most with President Trump, but using very different styles.
I'm Luke Messer.
Congressman Luke Messer tries to tie Trump to his personal family story.
The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer.
You know who he's talking about. People like my mom. She worked at the Delta Faucet factory, raised me and my brother by herself.
Congressman Todd Rokita starts out by repeating negative attacks against his opponents before pivoting to Trump.
I'm Todd Rokita, and I'll proudly stand with our president, Mike Pence, to drain the swamp.
Who makes a better case for their support of President Trump? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Elise Schrock, I want to start with this, actually. Messer is once again staying positive with his ads, and as we talked about, the other two candidates are definitely not. How much longer can he do that as both of his opponents are on the attack?
It's the Hunger Games out there. It's getting seedy. And we know that messaging often follows polling. So somewhere out there, someone is saying that the negative works. Two out of three are doing it. I think we could probably see Messer go negative by the primary.
As she said, ads also often follow polling. Is the Messer campaign here hoping that by not going negative, that they'll stand out even more?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and that may be a sound strategy. These three guys are really the only game in town from a big media kind of statewide presence. So most of the ads that people are seeing are U.S. Senate Republican primary ads. So I think two things. One, I agree that I think the Messer strategy, one, it fits his personality better. We just know him to be a better fit in this type of message. Whereas Rokita is more aggressive, and that reflects his, the posture he's taken in this campaign. I think, we've debated, for months now, the wisdom of tying yourself this close to Trump. At least in the Republican primary, and in a way that they must, all three of these candidates must believe sustains themselves beyond the primary if they win it, that Trump is popular enough in Indiana right now on a statewide basis, plus 50% statewide, which means he's got to be really high in the Republican primary, that this could be a winning strategy, maybe going through all the way through through November. I don't think it'll be this intense on Trump. But I don't think it's one of these things where you got to do a hard pivot after the primary and get away from the president, because I think he is still far more popular here than maybe he's polling nationwide, and they're drawing lessons from that, and they're seeing maybe things that other people don't see or assume.
To that end, that's what both of the campaigns sort of tried to do this week with their ads, or what both of these two campaigns tried to do with their ads. But the AP unearthed an interview from 2016 with Todd Rokita, in which Rokita says that the president is vulgar, if not profane, and that sometimes he needs to be more presidential than obviously candidate Trump when he got the nomination. Is that sort of one step forward, two steps back as he tries to tie himself to Trump?
Maybe in the old days. I'm a broken record now talking about the new era in politics. I mean, if saying mean things about the president were a disqualifier, there'd be nobody in the cabinet room. There'd be, and look at House and Senate leadership, you're cozy on some things, singing arm in arm, lockstep, la-di-da, we're going to ride this wave of unanimity together. But other times you go back and look at the clips, and people have been pretty harsh at different times. So let's say this is an era of a New Testament era of turning the other cheek and forgiveness. So, but I mean,
that must be what it is.
It must be what it is. I like, because yeah. I like to put things in. Well, that may be more like it here. I don't think it has as much to do with philosophy, fundamental philosophy, as it does political gamesmanship. And there is that calculation, as has been suggested by Mike, that somebody's polling suggests that in Indiana, at least, Donald Trump is still something, you know, a rising star, or at least is holding steady, and you want to hook, you know, latch on and hold on.
And so is the wall.
And
everyone's talking about
the wall. Well, that's the thing. Let me just offer this biblical footnote. There's no guarantee, though, that the people who put Donald Trump in office from Indiana are the same people who are going to go and vote in either a primary or a midterm, because there were a lot of new voters, which surprised everybody. So who's to say they'll be as motivated? And then the other thing I would say, if Luke Messer, at this point in the game, were to go negative, there's a political downside to that, too, which is all of a sudden people, because that's not been the path he's taken this far,
it looks like
they
he's
say
desperate,
he's desperate, he must be down, and then funders are calling him and saying, what happened? Why'd the bottom fall?
So if you're looking at these two guys, obviously Mike Braun has tried to do the same thing, tying himself to Donald Trump, is saying, well, Donald Trump was a businessman, a political outsider, so am I. But if you're Rokita and Messer, who are two, you know, congressmen, is just style alone going to say that Rokita is going to have an easier time tying himself to Donald Trump?
I think that's why the story from the AP is got some potential impact in this race, because when you have so closely tied yourself to Donald Trump, when you have an ad out this week pulling on the hat and calling the other people never-Trumpers and Democrats or rhinos, I guess, and then we find out that you did say that about Donald Trump. And I don't disagree that this is a different era, and the conventional wisdom has been warped a little bit. But I do think that because he has tied himself so closely to Donald Trump at every step of the way, that people who hear that are going to recoil a little bit. People who would support Todd Rokita are going to recoil a little bit and say, wait a minute, really? And I think that that may have an effect. And I think you'll see Messer in particular jump on that in the next week. And I think you'll probably see his next ad built around that. And he'll start attacking himself, not in the same vein that we've seen with these highly personal attacks, but more of a, really, you're saying this, you're being a hypocrite about this. And I think it will have a role in this final 3 weeks of the campaign.
It should be noted in that same interview, Todd Rokita did acknowledge he was backing Marco Rubio at the time, but did acknowledge that if Trump were the nominee, he would back Donald Trump. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will Luke Messer's strategy so far of staying positive in his campaign ads help him or hurt him? A, it'll help him, or B, it'll hurt him. Last week's question, is going from mayor to president realistic for Pete Buttigieg? 55% say yes, 45% say no. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, an op-ed this week from House Speaker Brian Bosma defends the work of the legislature's 2018 session amid criticism of the need for an upcoming special session.
Bosma's piece first appeared as a pointed letter to the editor of the Indy Star after two columnists at the paper sharply criticized the way session ended. The House Speaker lists off what he sees as the accomplishments of 2018, including filling a K-12 funding gap, helping DACA recipients get job licenses, and CBD legalization. Bosma also acknowledges that he's, quote, not happy about the special session.
Mike O'Brien, does this come off from the Speaker as a justified defense or overly defensive?
I think it was a justified defense. I think had the Indianapolis Star and, you know, any others who criticized the legislature in the wake of that final day hadn't been so over the top in how they characterized the entire session instead of like just those last, as the Speaker conceded, less than graceful last few hours of the legislature.
Putting it mildly.
But the Speaker did outline kind of the track record of achievement. First and foremost, funding for K-12 schools due to an increase in enrollment. You know, I'll tell you what, if the legislature, as the Star columnist suggested, had not met at all, and the DACA story hits in the middle of February, I mean, the Indianapolis Star is the first one in the building demanding the legislature convene and fix that problem, which Republicans did quickly and was another one on the list of achievements. Now we're going to have to go in for this, hopefully, one day, maybe 2 day session to resolve some of these tax bills that were complicated down the stretch, and the deals came together late, and the clock did run out, and was mismanaged. You can't argue against that. But this is a pretty easy fix in the context of how the session ended.
It wasn't just newspaper columnists who were criticizing the session as a whole as being short on accomplishments. Those criticisms came from some of the people who sit in this chair every week. Was this a fair defense, though, from Speaker Bosma?
First of all, the things that he touted as major achievements, I would argue, were fixes for problems that the supermajority caused. If we're fixing a funding gap, the funding is created by the legislature. If we are going to go back and look at CBD oil and pass something on CBD oil, yes, but it was going back to clarify language from the session prior. The DACA issue, which I felt very passionately in favor of, I'm very happy we fixed it, but it was fixing a loophole that was created by legislation that came out of the legislative session. If we're going to call fixes achievements, I'm not sure how we're going to move Indiana forward.
Is this Speaker Bosma sounding defensive or a needed defense?
Oh, I think he needs to be defending the institution. As a leader of the institution and as one of the people who was responsible for the lack of coordination in the last day, then, you know, that's part of his role. I think he was defensive, and understandably so. I think he felt a little attacked. But I think that all of it will take care of itself if they do indeed come in and do what they say they're going to do and get it done efficiently. The risk, of course, is if somebody decides that this is a chance to grab some headlines or to open it up to new areas or to somehow prolong the process. Then he's got a real problem, and everybody else in the General Assembly on the Republican side of the aisle will have some explaining to do.
And talk about efficiently for that special session being important to how sort of the 2018 legislature is viewed. Is efficiently almost have to be just that one day, or can they afford to stretch it into two or three?
It would be a tall order to go more than a couple, I would say, because we've already had virtually every player who will be at the table saying that this will be a limited agenda. Again, they can't necessarily keep members from introducing whatever they want. That's their prerogative. But you have the governor's office. You have leadership in both chambers saying that there's a need to keep it isolated. You know, in terms of the whole session, keep in mind we didn't even have special session, or I should say short sessions, at a time,
and then not too distant,
like I say, recent past, that's how I look at things now. And it was to deal with emergency legislation. So against that framework, anything is an accomplishment. And I do think it's, I won't go that far, but I will say it's too easy probably to criticize any legislative body, especially one that deliberates. If the prize or the measuring stick and the framework by which they're judged is simply how much legislation gets passed and sent to the governor's office, well, pick your favorite banana republic where there's a rubber stamp legislature, and they probably pass 100% of the legislation that's proposed by whatever the leading junta is. So sometimes I guess what I'm getting at is what doesn't pass is just as important as what does pass, and because you have so many factions, not just from two sides of the aisle, but within the Republican majority, supermajorities in both chambers, that's why I think there's a sensitivity here on Brian Bosma's part. I bet he'd like to be able to say, hey, people, just imagine what it would have been if I wasn't as effective in controlling these various factions as I was. You want things to pass?
Yeah.
Be my guest.
The one bill that didn't pass was the one that cut the length of the special or the short session in half.
That's true.
Make it
there
even shorter.
There's been a bill to do that a few years in a row now. All I know is the word junta isn't used enough on this show. A report in the Indianapolis Star this week shows the private company running the state's lottery frequently pulls big money scratch-off games before the major payouts come through.
A private company, IGT Indiana, formerly GTEC, took over the Hoosier Lottery 5 years ago, and in that time, more than half of scratch-off ticket prizes worth at least $1 million have gone unclaimed. That's because the company pulls the games off the shelf before people can win those payouts. The Star's report says Hoosier Lottery players have lost out on nearly $29 million in such games since IGT took over. That's compared to just 10% of unclaimed prizes before the private company was awarded its contract in 2012.
John Katzenberger, is this simply the risk you run when the state lets a private company take over something like the lottery?
Well, it is apparently a factor and a fact of life. The same company or a subsidiary of the same company had a similar experience in Illinois Illinois since has changed that. And the explanation from the lottery doesn't make a lot of sense when they say we're pulling these early, but it doesn't really affect the odds of you winning the big prize. That doesn't flow. That doesn't follow. And it looks like, and apparently is, a way to ensure that you don't have to pay out as much money as you said you're willing to pay out in the course of the game if you'd sold every ticket and given away every prize. That's the danger that the lottery has here. They've already reworked the contract with the provider to lower the targets for revenue because they were so woefully short of them. And now they're allowing them to stop games early without paying out the big prizes. And I think that they run the risk of ruining the credibility of the Hoosier Lottery and killing the revenue stream as a result.
Does the state need to take a long look at this private company?
It would behoove them to, I think, look long and hard at any entity that has taken over an operation formerly run by
the
public
state.
By the state. We don't have a great track record necessarily in this state. You think about, the IBM-led consortium that was going to, revitalize, remake welfare, public assistance in our state. And, of course, a few years into a 10-year contract, Daniel's administration pulled the plug on that. And
that lawsuit's still kind of ongoing.
I think the last decision, there was a settlement that had to be paid or damages from
it. Now they're still working out
now
exactly
there's
how
always
money's
going to
work.
There's always an appeal. But you look at, there have been problems with private, the privatization of medical functions in prisons, the toll road company consortium went bankrupt. Highway 37, which I can't, I was late last week for a taping, thanks to that. It'd be done by...
You're always late for a taping.
Well, that's right. But I like to blame it on privatization whenever possible.
I'm throwing out privatization because you're late for
but
taping.
But I do think that because of the track record we've seen here and in other states, it would behoove the state to look long and hard because privatization isn't inherently progress.
And it's not even... So when it comes to the group running the lottery... it's not even as if they did redo the contract to lower those targets. They're still not hitting those targets. Is it time for the state to, if not take back over the lottery, at least look for somebody else to run it?
Yeah, the private company that's running this, though, is still outperforming the way the state ran it. They just... I think we had a growth in this industry in general. There's a lot of different other options for people. I think the explanation of the odds in this situation was they were saying if there's 100 tickets and we cut it off at 90, if you bought the fifth one, your odds were the same one whether you bought that one or the one at the end. And if the tickets stop selling, what are we supposed to do? Leave these things? I mean, there were 100. I didn't even understand the scope of the number of new scratch-off tickets, the number of new games that are introduced to the public, and it's a marketing exercise. So if a game's hot and then it fizzles out, you're going to waste a lot of money just trying to keep a dead game, on the
show. Then maybe you shouldn't introduce a bad game.
Well, I don't think until you're doing it, and so then you either
then
just,
don't
you
make
live
the
decision. Well, but you're making a promise then to very few or nobody because they're not playing anymore.
But there was a huge spike in the number of these payouts that didn't take place from before and after. And yes, they are bringing in more money than they did when the state alone was just running it, but there's way more payouts that aren't coming through, so does something need to change?
Yeah, and I mean, I think we can get in the weeds on how this goes through the process, but when it comes down to it, I'm thinking about my abuela. She plays her scratch-offs every single week, and when she hears the payouts aren't happening in the correct way, that's what she hears. She's not going to hear this, even though I hope she's watching today.
But that's also an incentive for the private company to not pull those tickets. I mean, if this is a real
credibility problem, but it's been happening.
But
this is not 1 year. This is 5 years, and they haven't.
Right, but it also happened in other states, so they know from this experience that they can't be in this situation unless it makes business sense and sense for these games to manage it that way.
Well, if it's a matter of, though, just one suggestion, if that's the case and you need to take obsolete products off the shelf, as they would say, to make shelf space for others, take the unclaimed money, $29 million in the question here, roll it into some kitty or pool that will be distributed through more popular games. That certainly, I think, would address the criticism.
Well,
but in lieu of that, in the absence of that, you probably have... Well,
when they close the game, it goes
they do
away.
Go away. Yeah. Well, they go into shareholder.
All right. A report this week from a left-leaning policy group gives Indiana a failing grade when it comes to policies aimed at helping women.
The study from the Institute for Women's Policy Research looks at data that includes the gender pay gap, women's health measures, paid leave policies, and child care efforts. Legislation to address many of those issues was introduced in 2018, but not given a hearing. But Indiana Republican leader Anne Hathaway says the report doesn't provide the whole picture. Hathaway is the executive director of the Lugar Series, which boosts Republican women in public service. And she says the study looks for legislation in each state to create its grades when Indiana doesn't think legislative solutions are the necessary path. Hathaway points to a coding education program for offenders at the Indiana Women's Prison and the governor's new parent leave policy for state employees.
John Schwanis, what grade would you give Indiana for its policies aimed at helping women?
How about I go with the cliche cop-out of, I'll give it an incomplete grade.
I know that's
an oldie but a goodie. I'd say that because it's beyond policy solutions. I mean, you don't say we're going to empower women in our culture and in all sectors of the economy and government through one, you know, some provision, subsection A of Title IX in the state code. It certainly helps and can promote and sets the right atmosphere, but the best way probably to do it is more organically, and that's why we should all be heartened, I think, how many women, again, this is not just an Indiana thing, we're hearing about anecdotally across the country, how many people are getting into the elective process, running for office, and large percentages of them, record numbers of them, are women, very qualified women. So arguably, seeing some of these individuals in office, regardless of their party affiliation, and proving their mettle in that context is probably, in the long run, more effective than the passage of any particular makeup bill.
And that's not too far from Anne Hathaway's argument, which was, in Indiana at least, we don't believe that legislative solutions are the ones that we need to be doing. Should it be more holistic than that? Should it be legislative solutions and this other stuff?
Or maybe even fewer legislative impediments. You know, you think about the changes to the abortion laws in Indiana that have made it more difficult for women to get abortions, or they have to go through more hoops to do that. And I think that there needs to be a holistic approach, and it can't be just by example, although that's terrific. But I'll feel a lot better when women who are so-called unqualified to office get the same consideration that men who are definitely unqualified for office in many cases, and then I'll know we've gotten somewhere. But we're a long way from that, I think, at this point.
This group gave Indiana a D for its policies aimed at helping women. Is that fair to you?
Yeah, that is fair to me. First of all, Anne Hathaway has my deep respect. She has led the Lugar series. She has propelled women into leadership positions across the state and beyond, and I think that's wonderful. The two proposals that she had talked about, the coding in the women's prison and the family leave policy.
To be fair, Anne, she listed a lot more policies than that.
Those are great policies.
But I talked to her earlier. It was a long list.
Yeah. It was a very long list.
and they're great policies. It's just enough isn't even visible on the horizon, and there's no reason that the legislature can't lead the way on this, can't lead by example. I mean, for every one of those policies listed, there are additional policies that get shelved every year to take away the tampon tax, the diaper tax, to make sure that child care is more affordable. And to John's point, it does have to be more holistic. This is institutional. This goes beyond the legislature, even though I do think they can be better leaders in this. It's tough out there for women. I know, I'm the only woman on this panelist, I'll speak to that. But, you know, we face small things every day based on, you know, people look at what we wear differently. People look at, you know, the timbre of how we speak differently, what we're doing with our free time. I wish people would ask me more about my policy decisions than my relationship status. There are a lot of steps needed. It has to happen in the legislature. It has to happen in conversations like this. I appreciate the forum that you've given me to talk about it today. But enough hasn't happened yet.
Anne Hathaway, a lot of her point was leading by example, pointing to things like the governor's parent leave policy that he put in for state employees. Is leading by example enough when the legislature could at least incentivize, if not force, private employers to create things like a child care or a parent leave policy?
I think much of that was very well said. I think it's a mix. I think the difference in I don't think we disagree on outcomes. I think we disagree on approach in a lot of ways. That's not to say there can't be a mixture of kind of legislative top-down mandates versus just kind of lead from example. I think Governor Holcomb's done a great job of that with family leave for state employees, for putting women in charge of the IEDC and other major state agencies. Dr. Walthall, I have to say, some of the biggest agencies in state government are run by just incredible women who have done a lot in life beyond public service and absolutely deserve those opportunities. I think it's just a mixture. It's finding that balance between the legislature telling an employer what they have to do and what fits, what fits best. I thought the interesting, if you really dig into the numbers of this study, it really concludes that the District of Columbia is the far and away best place in the world for women. I don't know if that's true or not, or if it's only true if you work for Congress or you work on K Street or something, but the numbers behind all of this had D.C. 50% higher on wages and every other measure of women's prosperity.
Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Elise Schrock, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. And be sure to register to vote in the upcoming primary. The deadline is April 9th. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.